Due to the global outbreak of the coronavirus, the Voice of America is taking every necessary precaution to safeguard its employees, so our broadcast will look a little different today and in the near future as we reduce our staffing at VOA headquarters here in Washington. We appreciate your staying with us on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, you're welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from my home in Arlington, Virginia, a suburb of Washington, D.C. And today on Straight Talk Africa, we will focus on South Sudan and discuss how the new government of national unity is doing. 9 years after South Sudan regained its independence from Sudan, much remains the same in a country under siege by lack of infrastructure, roads, healthcare, and security. VOA's John Tanza Mabusu has more on this story.
In many homes around Jebel Buma County, dinner consists of leaves popularly known as marjoram, which taste bitter and can be picked off the bushes outside. It's neither filling nor nutritious, but in South Sudan's Jebel Buma and Pachala counties, there is not much else to eat. Many children are not in school and health care is not available. Jebel Buma is located in the eastern part of South Sudan near the border with Ethiopia. The county hosts the Buma National Park, one of the largest national parks in Africa. Jebel Buma County is part of the Pibor administrative area created by President Salva Kiir after he dissolved the 32 states in February this year. The county borders Akobo, Torit, Jonglei, Kapoita, Bie, and Terkeka. Jebel Buma County is only 290 miles from the South Sudanese capital, Juba. ET airstrip is the only lifeline for the population of Jebel Buma County and the outside world.
Open the road, let the road come here. Bring supply, service delivery. You know what the people of South Sudan need? The people are happy in their area because the youth are not employed. They don't have job. And the only thing they resort to is cattle raiding so that they can get resources.
Non-governmental organizations operating in the area use the airstrip during the dry season for receiving life-saving items for the Kachipo, Jie, and the Murle communities. Once it starts raining, life stops in the county.
Now, accessibility to this location is really very difficult. You come, especially between the month of May to December, you have to use aircraft. You come inside and you go outside by aircraft. No roads, no nothing. Every place, the roads doesn't exist, but people go through the bush during the dry season.
Thousands of families in Jebel Buma and Pachala counties have been victims of catastrophic floods, coupled with lack of decent roads and widespread insecurity. The people of these two counties, near the border with Ethiopia, have been effectively cut off from the rest of South Sudan. Families survive on wild leaves for food, while others migrate to Ethiopia, where services are offered in refugee camps. President Salva Kiir's special envoy to the area, Akot Lual Arech, says the situation in several parts of Jebel Buma and Pachala counties is exacerbated by frequent intercommunal violence.
Otherwise, President actually has pledged some school and hospitals there in that place. But because of the condition now, there is no roads and there are no accessibility, that makes things difficult in that area. If you go to Maban, or if you go to some other places like Nasser, you will feel bad also. And it is because of the war that is taking place now. War and development cannot go together.
Arech has been visiting the area to explain why the government has done very little to address the issues facing the communities in Jebel Buma and Pachala.
So we need boarding school and the girls and boys to be in the boarding school, plus network and road.
Japogini, amenyagi.
These are the two things we need.
How are you, children? Very good.
You are children are the most affected part of the population in Jebel Buma and Pachala counties. This school in Jebel Buma County has no teachers, and the children have nowhere to turn to.
I mean, 2 years ago, there was one of the child which was interviewed here in Pibor by Washington Post, and they went and they published the news. The child wanted to go to school, but he had nowhere to go to. So one of the American women phoned the name of that child, and they tried to trace the child. They talked to me while I was in Juba, and we were able to trace that child through UNICEF.
There are few non-governmental organizations supporting educational programs in Jebel Buma County. Most school-age children stay at home.
We only have one primary school, which was been blown away by the hair, and we only remain with 4 rooms, of which many children are now studying under the trees, and which is a very big challenge.
Despite the challenges of getting teachers, the children are still eager to stay in class, hoping someone will come and teach them. The former governor of what was then Buma State has a different spin on the situation.
We don't have really teachers. So the few teachers that we have there, actually, they are not satisfied with the way how, of course, the salaries from the government side have been paid to the whole the civil servant in the country. And most of them actually, you know, went to humanitarian services, because agencies, at least, they are paying their staff better than the government one. So this has become a serious challenge in the state and even in the national level.
Education is not the only challenge facing communities in Jebel Buma and Pachala counties. This man in Pachala tries to show the frustrations of the population of Pachala as they struggle to get clean water. Lack of reliable supplies of food is another challenge facing thousands of residents in both Jebel Buma and Pachala counties. A lawmaker representing Pachala says she is worried about the fate of families who are cut off.
Those people in those areas, God is the one who's protecting them. Through the wildlife food, they're getting meat. Through the river, they're getting fish. But medication, will they get it through the river? Will they get it in the bush? With the meat of animal? No.
We hope this journey of the heart into Jebel Buma and Pachala counties will touch hearts of South Sudanese leaders and well-wishers to put an end to the challenges facing the population of these two counties. For VOA News, I'm John Tanza in Washington.
Thank you very much, John, for that package. My guests are John Tanza Mabusu, host and managing editor of VOA South Sudan In Focus radio program, and Ruth Mwok Tang, a former member of parliament of the Republic of South Sudan. Well, John and Ruth, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you again on this special edition of Straight Talk Africa.
It's always my pleasure to be on this show, Shaka Charlie.
Very interesting. Yeah, now John, how did you react to the 9th anniversary of the political independence of South Sudan from the Republic of Sudan?
My reaction was mixed. First, I'm happy to have a place called my country and its existence on Earth for 9 years. That's a significant progress. And then secondly, my heart breaks when I hear stories coming from home about how people are struggling to just put food on the table. That breaks my heart.
What about you, Ruth? What is your reaction to the 9th anniversary of the independence of South Sudan?
We are very happy to have a country that is called South Sudan.
as usual. Nothing, somebody should recreate about that. But is not as we wish we should have when we have the country. So the aspiration of the people of South Sudan when they have the independence and the freedom, they are not the one they are getting. They are getting the opposite of that. So we were all happy. And until now, we are happy that we had a country, but we are not getting what we're supposed to get in our own independent country.
We know, Ruth, that at least according to some of the evidence available to us, that some of the political elite of the Republic of South Sudan can confidently say they are better off today than 11 years ago when your country was part of the Republic of Sudan. But is that something that you think a vast majority of the population of your country can say that they are in fact better off today than they were 11 years ago?
Absolutely no. And I would say, Shaka, if there is any politician in South Sudan who would think that the country is better now, I would say that they are lying, or maybe they are people who are not leaders, for example, because the leaders, they believe things are good when the people are getting what they should get and when the people are very happy and people are getting the basic service. If you think that, what is a measure that you have taken as a leader to say that the country is better now than it was before? If it was to be my own thinking, I believe that the country is worse than we get it in 2011, because the people are not happy. Not only that, the people are dying. And you know, the aspiration of the people of South Sudan, like any country on the earth that got independent, the aspiration, first of all, you need independence. You need freedom. And the freedom is that you have to pursue your personal aspiration as a person and your individual, you know, conviction in your own country. These are not happening now in South Sudan. Again, people, aspiration is the independence of the country. We get the independence, but is the independence of South Sudan giving our people the dividend of the peace and the independence that they should get? No, absolutely no. I would disagree with anybody who say that South Sudan is better now than it was before. South Sudan is 10 times worse than it was in 2011.
Ruth, you just came back from a visit to your country. What are some of the most outstanding experiences that you could, in fact, share with us?
In South Sudan, the hope now for the people of South Sudan is the peace agreement that was signed in 2018. And that peace agreement gives South Sudan like 3 years transitional period to go for the general election. But as we speak right now, we almost spent all the 3 years with only two things. One thing, I mean, we only formed the government of the transitional government, the national transitional government of the national unity, which is not fully formed. As you may know, there was only the cabinet that was formed in last March, and the parliament is not yet reconstituted. The governors were just recently appointed, and some of them are not yet appointed. Now, the level of state, we don't have government in this state, even though now the governors, some of them are appointed. There are not yet government. There is no parliament in the state. There is no cabinet in the state. Only the governor who is just sitting waiting for the national government to be finished being formed. In saying all this, there is nothing good now in the country. Even though people are hopeful that this peace will work, it is not working on the ground. There are all the different things that are taking place, for example. There is a lot of fighting, communal fighting around South Sudan. Everywhere you go to Yongle State, people are fighting. And then you go to Baril Ghazal, whereby now the army are in a serious confrontation between the army and the civil population. So there is war everywhere. So there is nothing changed, Shaka. And the hope for peace is now fading away, because the thing that the government was supposed to do, that people were expecting that they would bring peace, they are not being done, for example. The country insecurity is to the highest scale. You have seen every day people are being killed in Juba, and the people who kill people, you cannot even find them. Some of the people went away with the impunity. Yeah, they kill with impunity. Nobody could be found. I mean, the unknown gunman that is known in Juba. So there is hope for peace, but there is nothing that is working on the ground.
I see. What about you, John? Do you agree for the most part with Ruth?
I think if you look at the scorecard of the South Sudanese politicians across the board, it doesn't look nice. Yeah, to talk about any changes since the country got its independence, Juba has changed. If you have been to Juba in 2011 and you go to Juba today, you will see significant changes. But these are, if you like, individual initiatives, individual projects, developments by people who have access to resources, who are building houses, and investors have put up huge buildings. When I was there last time, there's a semblance of a city coming out in Juba. But if you leave Juba, let's say 30 miles from Juba, nothing has changed. The village still looks the same. The people there are struggling to put food on the table. Services are non-existing, health services, education, and the list is just endless.
So you're talking about some aspects of what someone will probably call reflections of economic growth as opposed to economic development.
Correct. The economic growth is visible in Juba, but again, I have to stress that these are not projects funded by the government. These are individuals who have access to resources, who are putting up houses, who are putting up businesses, and they're trying their best. But development projects sponsored by the government, I am yet to see those kind of projects. But again, the government will say that they have been fighting throughout and there is no window of opportunity for them to look at issues that are affecting their own people. This is what I've heard from a lot of politicians in Juba who would say, if I ask them, how come there's no running water in the city? They will say, but we have been fighting throughout. We are just, we have just signed peace and we are beginning to look at the needs of the people.
Ruth, what do you think the government in Juba should do in order to adequately address the outstanding problems in Bor and some other places where the state of emergency has been declared recently?
Well, thank you, Shaka. First of all, people are really suffering, especially I saw the situation in Bor and in other places. It is obvious that when this kind of crisis happens, the government need to respond and to help people, whether in terms of material, like when people are displaced, of course, they will go to places where they don't have shelters and they don't have food and all this. I think that is a work of the government to respond, a serious response to those crises. And also, we would love to also call the international community, because South Sudan has been surviving because of the humanitarian assistance that come from, especially the United States and all the countries that are helping. I want the government to respond, but one would have, I'm not trying to say that the government cannot do it, but I don't think that the government is in that capacity now to do something to respond to this kind of situation, because the situation that we are in right now, this is a very serious issue that needs serious attention. If we have a government that is ready to help people, that would be an easy job for the government. But I heard some of them calling for international community to intervene, and that is because the government, I think, is not able to respond to those crises.
Now, when you think about it, Ruth, what are people in South Sudan really fighting for? First of all, observers will say the people in South Sudan are very few, and yet they have incredible resources, including at one time oil, which was celebrated as the black gold. And yet, that some of these resources, including oil, have in fact become a curse rather than a blessing.
Well, Shaka, this is a very big question, by the way, and to know that exactly what people of South Sudan are fighting for. You know, what brought the fighting is because we did not have a leadership in place. You know, getting an independence is another thing, and having building a foundation for the country is another. What brought the war is not just because the people of South Sudan lack war. People of South Sudan, of course, they have been tired of war for all 50 years we have been fighting. But we were not lucky that we did not get that leadership that in back on the nation building. The problem was because of the leadership that didn't take the nation building as the issue. You know, in CPA, there was something to do with the reconciliation between the community that had been fighting. And when because you, the leadership when, of the lead...
Mm-hmm. When, Ruth, when you talk about CPA, at least for the benefit of those who may not understand what CPA means, you are talking about the Comprehensive Peace Agreement.
I am talking about the Comprehensive Peace Agreement that was signed in 2000. That peace agreement, you know, created a roadmap on how you can build a nation. And building a nation, it starts with, you know, reconciling the community that have been fighting. There have been an article, a pull article of about the peace and reconciliation among the people of South Sudan themselves. But that one have not been tackled. And failure to tackle this one, that means the leaders who helped brought the country to be independent, who were leading the people, because it was the people of South Sudan who voted for the referendum. People poured, of course, that lead to the peace agreement, but the last stage, the last bullet was shot by people of South Sudan. So what should happen is that we fail in the nation building. What bring all this problem, Shaka, is all about the leadership. And it's the same leadership crisis that we have until today, and that will hurt us down the road. Because now even this peace agreement, people are really confused. They don't know what they are going for. Because now the Dinka leader is still now fighting themselves. Kolko want to take over by force from Salva Kiir. You may be hearing some report coming that Kolko have been building private area in Twin. And now there have been a fighting over that effort by the forces that belong to Salva Kiir and the forces that belong to Kolko. And now it become an issue of who become a replacement for Salva Kiir once Salva Kiir died. You know, taking out the issue of, okay, South Sudan belong to all, you know, different ethnic group. And now what we are trying to do, we are trying to implement the peace agreement so that we can go for the general election whereby the people of South Sudan will be able to choose leader who they want to be. But there are a few groups who think that this leadership belongs to certain people. And if Salva Kiir have to go somewhere today or maybe resign, it has to be somewhere from Salva Kiir area or from Salva Kiir tribe that will take that leadership. All in all, there's no idea. Right now, we don't have an identity that unites us as the people of South Sudan. We have what we call identity crisis. And this identity crisis, coupled with the lack of leadership in the country, there is a lot of confusion. Even in this peace agreement, you have the peace agreement that is not implemented. Part of it is being implemented, and part of it is being left out. And the part that is left out is the part that will not let us live in peace. Even if you have a government in Juba, you have the parliament being reconstituted today, there are basic issues, Shaka, that need to be done first. And those basic issues is, first of all, you have to create an identity crisis. We already in the we had an opportunity before to do all these things, but we failed to do them. And now when you find yourself in the mess, you can solve problem with the situation of Juba that is there today. I will tell you today, I support this peace agreement to be implemented 100%, but I can guarantee you today, there will not going to be any stability in South Sudan because the real issue are being left out. For example, in this peace agreement, there is something to do with hybrid court that bring account those who have committed the crime during the war and those who have looted the money, which is also a crime, corruption. and people don't want to talk about all this. And it seems that the whole pace that have been in the last government that bring the country to the war, they are the one now coming together. And when they come together, the state quo will not be for the people of South Sudan. Leave about what is happening. We don't know. Even in the next 2 days, we may hear a different story, because until now, people are fighting. There is a very serious tension now between Akol Kor and President Salva Kiir forces. And this is now open secret. Everybody knows about it in South Sudan. And now you have these people fighting for who should be the successor for Salva Kiir. And you have the people who are thinking that the peace is being implemented in Juba. We are in a deep crisis, and nobody will deny that.
John, listening to your fellow panelist, Ruth, I get a sense that he's pretty much saying that when you talk about a peace agreement in South Sudan, it's not really a peace agreement, but rather an agreement where the elite in the government under Salva Kiir, under the opposition under, for example, Dr. Riek Machar, are pretty much sharing positions of power rather than sharing power in the interests of the vast majority of the people of the Republic of South Sudan. How do you react to that?
Before I get into that, I would just like to caution my panelists to be careful with rumors coming from South Sudan. South Sudan is a place where rumors have taken a center stage. And I cover the country on a daily basis, minute by minute. And there are very many what you call WordPress publications published by people who are in the diaspora, sitting in their bedrooms or sitting rooms, spreading rumors about what is not happening in South Sudan. So let's be careful.
Is that what some pundits perhaps could refer to as the grapevine?
Correct. It's a grapevine. And as responsible citizens, we need to verify information with the correct sources. I am not saying what is coming out there is not correct, but putting it in the public becomes a little bit dangerous because we have not verified it. The fighting in turn is between a force that is sent to disarm civilians and the South Sudan Army. We have spoken to people on the ground. We have spoken to the South Sudan military spokesperson. Yes, there was a disagreement between the youth from the cattle camp who decided to attack the army. So that has been what is going on out there now. I don't know if this youth from the cattle camp belong to a political leader, but it's an open secret that most of the cattle camps in South Sudan are armed heavily. Some of them have even sophisticated weapons that are not found in the hands of civilians. So to say they belong to a political leader or a leader in South Sudan will be too much of prediction. Now, coming to the issue of leadership, the issues in South Sudan is more of lack of servant leaders. Leadership is about service. Leadership is not about some people worshiping you. Leaders across the political divide, including Red's political party, there is a great reverence for the leader, as opposed to the leader respecting these followers. That is why a lot of people that me and you, Shaq, have spoken to here would only talk about the leaders of their party. They only praise the leaders of their party. They would only want to look at what their party is doing and blaming the other party. But
are you talking about what some would characterize as personality cults?
Correct. And in politics, it's called groupthink, where I don't criticize my leader because I feel he's everything. He's almighty. He's Alpha Omega. This is what we are experiencing in South Sudan, and that is why we are in deep crisis. People like Red and the rest from the government and the other political parties are not able to stand up to their leaders to say enough is enough. We need to end this crisis.
What about the leaders who I am told thrive in each other's adversity.
The power struggle, the genesis of the crisis in South Sudan is a power struggle within the ruling SPLM party. That is what some people want to spin over it, but it's a crisis that started from the leadership. Machar wanted to vie for the leadership of the party, and the mode of election was not agreed upon. Some people said it should be a show of hands, others said no, it should be a secret ballot. So that is why they disagreed from there. And so if you look at the dynamics of leadership in South Sudan, it's about the leaders. It's about what the leaders want for themselves, not what they want for the people of South Sudan. If it's about what they want for the people of South Sudan, this crisis would have not dragged so long. President King has said on several times that he is not happy about the suffering of the people. Riek Machar has also said on several times that he is not happy to see people suffering. If indeed the two leaders are not happy to see people suffering, why can't they come together and say, enough is enough, let's move forward, let's do everything to end these problems? They are still bickering over who should be a governor where, which state should become to who. To me and to other ordinary South Sudanese, who it doesn't matter who is in charge of which state. All they need is a system on the ground to deliver services. But Riek's party and President King's party and the others have been bickering for too long on who should be, for instance, the governor of Upper Nile, which the people of Upper Nile really don't care who is their governor. All they need is they should be a governor and service should be provided.
Time is not our best ally, so we'll go for a break, and when we'll come back, we shall continue with the discussion. Don't go away.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. Every week, connect with our experts. You can ask them your questions and get their advice. Join me, Lina Hormudu, in Washington on Healthy Living, your new health program, right here on Voice of America.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa. And our topic today is a report card on the developments in the Republic of South Sudan. My guests are John Tanza Mabusu, host and managing editor of VOA South Sudan In Focus radio program, and Ruth Mwok Tang, a former member of parliament of the Republic of South Sudan. You know as well as I do that a great professor of physics, Albert Einstein, who taught at the prestigious Princeton University in New Jersey, the man who came up with the theory of relativity and is a Nobel Prize laureate for physics. He once observed that if you continue doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting different results, that is insanity. Are we talking about political insanity here, really?
There is a semblance of it. I would say, after covering South Sudan for so long, after speaking with many actors within the political arena of South Sudan, this is what most politicians have begun calling it madness, because we are doing the same thing every day. An agreement is signed. The first agreement was signed in 2015. The implementation process went and fell apart. The main protagonist fought in Juba. Riek Machar has to leave Juba on the run for 40 days. They revitalized the agreement, they signed it. They are still not agreeing on what should be done. For instance, Dr. Riek Machar was supposed to go to Juba when the unified forces are on the ground. That is in the agreement. But there was a shortcut. He went to Juba without the VIP protection force. In his statement, he said President Kiir has assured him that his security is guaranteed in Juba. the constitution was supposed to be amended to reflect what is in the revitalized peace agreement. And once the constitution is amended, it will be now used for swearing in office bearers from Dr. Riak, from Rebecca Nyandeng, Taban Dengai, and all the rest. That was not done. They did the opposite. The officials were sworn in, and then the constitution is still being, the work on the constitution is still being done. Now, the reconstitution of the parliament is not done. Riak alluded to it. It's not completed. So if this parliament is to be reconstituted, which constitution are they going to use for swearing in the parliamentarians? So it is a situation where, much as my co-panelists would want to heap the blame on one group, they share the blame. All the opposition parties in South Sudan share the blame, because it is a coalition. It's a government of national unity. All of them are part of it. The presidency it comprises of all the parties, including the SPLM-IO.
Very interesting. I know that, Ruth, you often criticize the president of the republic, President Salva Kiir Mayardit. Yet there are a lot of political observers also who criticize your boss, Dr. Riek Machar. As a matter of fact, there are some people who have suggested that perhaps what is needed to help address the fundamental problems of the Republic of South Sudan is that both President Salva Kiir and Dr. Riek Machar should step aside so that there is a fresh blood in terms of the new leadership. How do you react to that?
Well, first of all, Shaka, John Tanza was trying to say that I was saying something that I don't know. I want to tell John that I went to the country, and don't forget that I have a colleague who was in parliament. You know, I am very careful in saying things I don't have a good knowledge about. You know, in South Sudan, there is no cigarette, and you said it already, that there is no any cigarette. Everything is open cigarette in South Sudan. You also accept that there have been war and trouble. You know, there were the fight at the airport where there were people protecting the airport from the army of the country. And do you have a civilian that can protect any airport that is built by somebody? And you call them that they are just civilians, and they were just people who were fighting for somebody. That is not an issue. I think we are into this problem. And one of the things, I think I was too general enough. I was not specifically criticizing one side. And when I talk about the lack of leadership, I did not mention anybody. I did not mention that. I just talked generally about the leadership of the country and how the country was formed. Coming to
but
the
you
issue...
Have, but you have repeatedly said that on this program.
Yeah, I'm coming to that. My criticism towards Salva Kiir, until now, it will not go away. Of course, I know Salva have failed the country, and because he's a president. The president, we know in Africa is not like other country whereby you have institution of the government that are working like we are now in the US. In South Sudan or in Africa, the president, and because he did not the election, then that's why the country went to war. And this is a lack of leadership coupled with tribalism, because Salva is both tribal and he's also a weak leader. Until we try Riek Machar to become a president. I am not saying that Riek Machar and all the leaders, they do not have anything to be blamed for. They are leaders of South Sudan, of course. They are not only my leaders. If they want to lead South Sudan, any South Sudanese have a right to say, this leader are not good. I don't have a problem with that. But what we are seeing, let's come to issue right now. You can blame, for example, John was saying that we are not standing up to our leaders. When we stand up to our leaders, even what I'm saying today, John, nobody, I would assure you that nobody will say it, even from the SPLM-IO. The way I talk, not a lot of people talk like, because even now, the people from my party would think that I'm not favoring them, because I'm talking about how this country should be led and the leadership of this country should be caring for the people of South Sudan, apart from caring about what political party. The priority should be the people of South Sudan. And one of our bigger challenge is all we are better the politician to speak the truth than the journalists, because our journalists, they are biased. They have political parties, even though they don't belong to them openly. They are underground, belong to all the political parties. You can see them from the way they talk. And this is one of the bigger challenge that we cannot have a good country, because when the journalists, the church is divided. Politicians can be divided.
So are you? If you were to talk to us, Ruth, from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your South Sudanese heart and soul, are you suggesting here that politicians tend to be more objective than journalists?
In the case of South Sudan, yes, now. Because we don't have a credible journalists who are saying the truth. All of them, they have political parties. Of course, we know them. They have underground political party that they support. And sometimes they support their own tribal group. They are even, you know, more than politician in all the case. Because a politician, a journalist, a civil society organization leader, they are the people who will stand with the truth. They cannot go with the wind when the wind goes this way and then they come this way. They're supposed to challenge out the politician.
Do you have any incontrovertible evidence here, not liable to falter? I am talking about evidence not liable to falter, especially with regard to your fellow panelist, John Tanza Mabusu.
It may not be John as a person. I don't want to create problem here. But I have been also criticizing some of the journalists. Even if you follow my Facebook timeline, I thought that as also somebody who is eyeing for a good country, a country that have normal practices like any other country, where a politician should be politician, but a politician that care about the people. A journalist can do their work, but they must be independent from all this kind of. I don't want to mention the name right now because I don't want to cause other issues.
Why don't you?
But I know.
If you are saying the truth, if you are saying the truth, why don't you name names?
Unfortunately, I cannot mention the name of the people. I'm just telling you the general situation. Also, let me come to the issue of Malakal, for example. Now the peace agreement in South Sudan, Riek Machar have decided, to all the people's opinion, and to my opinion as personal rights, a lot of people know me, even in SPLMI, they call me very controversial because I don't agree with a lot of things. And even in our own party, where we sit in our own house, in which should not be public to everybody, I speak up my mind. I cannot tell you what I say when we are meeting at the SPLM. I may have a name that is given to me by the SPLM, but I believe I'm telling the people the truth, because as a young man, I just need South Sudan to be a better place. John Tanza can be a president of South Sudan tomorrow. And if John Tanza is going to make South Sudan a better place for all the South Sudanese, I do not have a problem with that. Right now, you have people in Juba. Dr. Riek and all opposition, they don't have anything. Even, a normal human being cannot blame opposition right now. You can just blame them because why they go to Juba. They should have continued fighting outside if everything is not met. But they decide to go to Juba even though things are not met. To me, I see is a guest of peace. Even though if in other, you know, forum like my forum, I have my own opinion. I think that this should be done and this should be done. But to talk about Riek Machar now, the only person that have power now to make things happen is Salva Kiir, and everybody knows it. Okay, Riek Machar can tell us that I went to Juba because I want peace. I don't want the war to continue. And that's why I'm in Juba. But now he's just sitting. The only person that have a power to do everything is Salva Kiir, for example.
How can you possibly have what I might characterize as the audacity to say that everybody knows that the problem is Salva Kiir? Does that include Salva Kiir's supporters too?
Yes. For example, I was trying to give you an example why I say Salva Kiir is the most powerful in Juba. He's the only person that appoint. The peace agreement gave the percentage to all political parties, SPLM-IO, all the political parties in G10 and every parties, including the party of Lamakol and all this. The percentage are divided. And in that division, it said the people who will be appointed, the percentage of the SPLM-IO, for example, will be appointed by the SPLM-IO in governorship. SPLM have to bring their own governors. Now we have an issue in Upper Nile. You know there is one state now that is no governor being appointed. And that is not only that. We came a long way from SPLM-IO should not get three governors, SPLM-IO should not get this state, they should get this state, and all this, we have come a long way. Now we stuck on one issue. We SPLM-IO have a candidate for a state that have been given to them by the peace agreement percentage allocation, the Upper Nile state. The SPLM-IO have to go and appoint somebody. They have to appoint Ras Moy, they have to appoint anybody. Now the SPLM-IO candidate is somebody called Johnson Oloy in Upper Nile state. Selfakir say, I don't want the nomination of SPLM-IO, which is very contradictory to the peace agreement, because no another party have a right to say that I don't want the nomination of other parties. Any party has the right to bring in a woman, a man, anybody that they love from their own party.
Time is not our best ally, Ruth. Let me go to John. John, among other things, I think that your integrity and your fellow journalists seem to be on the line. Would you like to defend yourself, your journalistic tribe?
I would like to say that the fact that Ruth is on this show shows that the journalism we do is not biased. And in South Sudan, let me just tell you that the political parties do not want their mistakes to be pointed. Once you point it, they will say you belong to their enemies. That is what I've been going through. I have been called a member of SPLM-IO when the fighting started from 2012 to 2015. When they signed an agreement, the IO turned and say, I am a stooge of the government. And they continued saying now that I am a member of the National Salvation Front. It's no secret, but it's just because if you speak the truth, they do not want it. They only want their version to be accepted, and they only want what they say to be the absolute truth in South Sudan. That is across the political division. It's not about IO or government or whoever is there. So this is the truth. So when we start pointing the mistakes within these organizations, they will say we are biased. We are not biased. The truth has to be told as it is. If President Salva Kiir is the problem, we say he's the problem. If Riek Machar is the problem, we say he's the problem. Why should that be a problem?
I know, as your fellow journalist, that you are a human being, and therefore you are very likely to be biased, except that you are biased in favor of the truth.
Correct. That's my biasness. I will say that with openness. I am biased towards the truth, and that is the cardinal rule of my training. If the truth is as it is, I say, and regardless of who does not like it, that's their own problem. And let me just come back to the issue of leadership here. You are asking if President Kiir and Riek Machar step aside, will there be peace? I think rotational presidency is a solution for the problem in South Sudan, because every community wants to enjoy the national cake. And my panelist, Red, was saying that President Kiir is tribalist. I think Riek Machar has been accused of being tribalist several times too. And Thomas Cirillo and Lamakol and the rest of the leaders have been accused of being tribalist. Tribalism is our problem in South Sudan. Every community goes into power and claims that they are there to represent their community. That is why they say our son. And that is why every leader is appointed. You will see their community dancing in that ministry. Today, if Red is appointed a minister of South Sudan, the people from his village will come and dance, just celebrating that their son is appointed, instead of celebrating that South Sudanese youth leader has been appointed there. So that is the problem. And then the other problem is we tend to see South Sudanese issues from a tribal lens. We don't see them from a South Sudanese patriotic stand. Today, if if the truth is regarded as partisan, what is the hope for that country? If you speak the truth and they say you're biased, what is the hope for that country?
I think there is no problem in being and in being proud and part of your ethnic community or what you say your tribe, while at the same time being patriotic to your country. What is interesting about tribe is that a member of your tribe only comes to call upon the tribe to defend him or her when they are found in trouble. Because when they are busy stealing the state coffers, they are busy abusing power, they are not doing that in the interest of the tribe. In fact, when they steal money, when they are corrupt, they do not share even their loot with members of their ethnic community. So I think it is simply a way of being unpatriotic, being selfish, politically and personally greedy. Why? How do you react to that?
I agree with you totally that greed is in the center of every politics, because politics is dynamic. And every politician who says, that is politics in itself, because the issue in South Sudan, when the leaders disagreed, they appealed to their communities. When you say they're in trouble, they look back to their communities and say, our interest is at stake. And so war starts and everybody lines behind their leader. But in actual fight, the individuals use their community to achieve their individual goals. Because if it's all about me being in the office so that I can serve my communities, I have been to several places in South Sudan, including the hometown of President Salva Kiir. There's nothing there to show for. People are struggling to live in those places. I have been to Ler, hometown of Riek Machar. There's nothing there to show for. So politics is about what people need for themselves. And the people of South...
And yet, those specific individuals that they have mentioned are said to have amassed millions and millions of dollars, both in property and bank accounts, outside of the Republic of South Sudan.
What I'm saying is that the Century Project, which is a subsidiary of Enough Project, has done a lot of investigations into corruption in South Sudan, and they have come out with names of leaders in South Sudan who have been sanctioned by the U.S. government because of corrupt practices. And so the issue of corruption is there, but if you say the corrupt leader takes the resources, it doesn't trickle to their people. It doesn't trickle to their people. I have been to many places in South Sudan, hometowns of these leaders, including President Kiir's hometown, home village of Akon. There's nothing there that I've seen to show that this is the village of the president. I have been to Ler, which is the hometown of Riek Machar. There's nothing to show there that this is where Riek Machar comes from, and so they develop. I have been to Malakal and other places which belongs to Lamakol and the other leaders. You don't see anything there to show that this is the hometown of leader A and B, and you say, okay, this justifies what is happening.
Very interesting. What about you, Ruth? How do you respond to your fellow panelists' observations, including his very interesting proposal or suggestion that perhaps what South Sudan needs is a sort of rotational presidency?
I agree with John Tanza on some of the things. For example, the issue of tribalism is an issue that we cannot run away from it. And as he said, there is a nature that, you know, the country can need to be built. And when you build a country, building a nation is putting in place the institution and creating law that will guide the people. And this law become the nation of the people. And what has been put in the place in South Sudan is not something that is close to the nation building. It's a corruption, it's a tribalism. So now the culture of South Sudan become what the politicians are doing, for example. So yes, tribalism is one of the issues that we are facing that we cannot run away from. Of course, each and every one of us have a tribal genetic in his blood. We are all tribal group, we are all communal, because we are African, we grow up in that environment. But it is up to you as a leader to decide that there is something bigger than your own tribe. And as we know that we are a different nation that are put together to form one nation, it is very important for us to forge an identity that brings us together. That is why I say that our journalists are the people of South Sudan. I know journalist is a broader term that applies to any country, but John Tanza is a journalist who can cover things from all over Africa and US and all this. It's not specifically in South Sudan, but when it comes to South Sudan, we want our journalists to be nationalists, because they are the one to check us up when we are getting out from the politics of tribalism and all this kind of thing. They are the people who will be correcting us. And anything that politicians fear the most are the civil society organization and journalists.
Ruth, you have been complaining that the current peace agreement, which resulted into a government of national unity, is disproportionately controlled by the faction or group of President Salva Kiir Mayardit.
Yes.
When you talk about elections, who would then organize and conduct those elections in order to meet the democratic threshold of being free, fair, transparent, verifiable, and credible?
For example, we don't have a national army right now. We have a mix of militia and tribal militias and all, everywhere in South Sudan. Everywhere, not only one place. And for you to have a national army, you are supposed to implement the security arrangement and bring all the forces. You start from the police, the fire brigade, and the national security, and the armed forces, AMI. You make them together. And they have to reflect the diversity of the people of South Sudan. And each and everyone will see themselves in, so that you don't give a chance to somebody tomorrow who will control the election. Why do you think Salva Kiir, for example, or the government of South Sudan is doing that? They're doing that because they don't want the army to be mixed, because when the army becomes diverse, you will not be able to control the army.
Thank you very much. John, what about you?
All the parties that signed the revitalized agreement takes the blame for delaying. I'll give you examples. It's not all.
Some of the parties
did not have armies to report to the cantonment areas.
That is fine. On that note, Reese, please, you have already had an opportunity to rebut, okay? On that note, John and Reese, I hope after this debate, you can, in fact, take a leaf from Salva Kiir Mayardit and Riek Machar and have a sort of exchange of social amenities on Nyamachoma. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, South Sudan. And please, please remember to keep the African hopes alive. Thank you.